Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. Daniel, you made it back from Virginia, and good to have you back in Lake Jackson.
Well, no thanks to the TSA, but I indeed made it back in one piece, barely.
Yeah, that's a that's a stressful situation.
It's a different program.
Yeah, someday we'll talk about the TSA like we haven't talked about it before. But anyway, we want to talk about Syria today. There's been trouble brewing there for quite a few years. But once again, the conflict is between the Syrian government and Russia and the United States and their allies, because we have to sort out who's bombing whom and for what reason. But there definitely was some conflict this weekend, and our Air Force went and bombed some people there, and it looks like it was helping ISIS, and it wasn't doing much for the cause of peace. But it had to do with this de-escalation zone that Syria set up along with Russia, along with Turkey and United Nations, and they agreed to this. And this was a move to de-escalate the war. But then the United States wasn't so happy about that because they weren't really in charge. So they came up with this de-confliction zone.
Yeah.
And there was now, they unilaterally did it. We just set it up and said, well, you can't do this and this and this. So there's a conflict going on there at Al-Tanf, and ISIS was active doing things. And we entered into the fray and said that, assuming that we own the country, we could set up the zone, the more legitimate de-escalation zones was not the point. It was what we set up, and we said, this is it. It goes to show that who's in charge, and there's a big argument going on. So the bombing occurred, and it looks like it served the interests of ISIS. But who wants to believe that? I don't want to believe it. But if you look at the evidence, it looks like it was damaging, the government. But it makes sense for our policy, because we will use the enemy if they're fighting against our enemy. And we've done this for many, many years, and we've been using ISIS to try to take out Assad. Hasn't worked too well, and Russia, of course, has gone with their allies, and they've gone with the United Nations, and actually they in technicality, they stick with the law, and yet we stick with our power. And I think that's what led into this conflict today. So what do you think is going to come of this now? Are they going to wave a wand and this is going to go away? Or do you think the Russians are serious about this? Because they've said, hey, this is no way proper. And this looks like it's just going to accelerate the conflict between the United States and Russia.
Yeah, and I don't think it's any accident that the U.S. set up, what it did essentially is it went into Syria, it set up essentially a U.S. military base, and it said, okay, guys, nobody can come within 50 kilometers of this base. This is our deconfliction zone. And actually, if we have a little map here to show you why it is so important where they have this space, Al-Tanf is right on the border of Syria and Iraq. And this is, we talked about this, I think, as well, the Iraqi and Syrian leadership have gotten together a couple times in the last month or so to talk about how they can join together to fight ISIS. That's the last thing the U.S. wants, because the groups that are operating down there are not the official Assad army, the Syrian government forces. They're a militia that's allied with him, but it's a Shia militia. And the last thing the U.S. wants is to have the Shias active down there, even if they're fighting ISIS. And this is, like you say, this is what was happening. The Shia militias were attacking ISIS down there, and the U.S. didn't like it. It wants its own backed militias to be fighting ISIS down there. So yes, if you can get that.
Well, yes, and to complicate things, there's one other country that's always involved, not so directly, but indirectly, and that's Iran. They're very much involved in the region. That's their neighborhood, and they're Shia, basically. And they had something very unusual happen over the weekend. ISIS attacked them. I thought our reports are, that we have to listen to, is that they're the terrorists, and they're part of the ISIS terrorists and the jihadists. But now they're attacking, the Iranians, and they went after the shrine for the Ayatollah, as well as the parliament, which is very, very serious stuff. But it makes the point that this whole argument of whose side the Iranians are on is is that what they tell us is just not true, that they're part, you know, of the terrorist squad, because they're being attacked, and they're Shia, and we have Shia here, you know, involved in Syria right now, and it's the Sunnis and the radicals there that are defending Saudi Arabia and the other people who are, you know, and us who are trying to get rid of Assad. So now it's involving the Iranians. My guess would be in the next short period of time that all of a sudden isn't going to burst out into a major military thing. But once again, it describes the conflict that goes on in this region and the deceitfulness and the misinformation we get from our media about how bad the Iranians are. You know, this to me is the biggest problem.
Yeah, it is. You know, it sort of underscores the interest. You know, the same Shia militias that the U.S. is bombing by al-Tanf in this deconflict zone are the same ones that's fighting alongside with in Mosul to kick out ISIS. They're both fighting ISIS. And I think, you know, this unfortunate attack in Tehran, first of all, it was the first time ISIS has hit Iran inside its own borders. Obviously, if they're attacking Iran, they're upset about the fact that Iran or an Iran-backed militia is fighting them in Syria and is fighting them in Iraq. Yet we're also fighting Iran. And as a matter of fact, you point out the attack yesterday. But today, probably almost as we speak, actually, I was just looking before we went on live, and Bernie Sanders was speaking. The Senate is now preparing to impose new sanctions on Iran.
So it's the same old story. And of course, my argument is that sanctions are acts of war, and we've been looking for a fight. And this whole idea of blaming the Iranians, because they are. I think a lot of Americans probably believe the propaganda that they are the country that participate in the most terrorism.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely false. And the country that does produce the most terrorists is Saudi Arabia. And yet we give them more weapons. So it's so contradictory of what we do. And, you know, we're supposed to be thinking about what is best for America. You know, maybe America should be first. But we get over there and there are so many different factions. We don't even know sometimes which side, like you just pointed out, we're with one group in one country and we're against them in the next country. So it's sounds like America's interests are most left out, because how many people believe that we need to do this to make America safe? It has nothing to do with making America safe. It has something to do with bankrupting this country, has something to do with selling weapons, it has something to do with oil and natural gas, it has something to do with religious value, but it has nothing to do with benefits to the United States, to America. We do not benefit from this. I don't see one positive thing that can come from our insistence on, you know, challenging the government of Syria and then confronting the Russians, condemning the Iranians, who are less hostile and less participants in anything terroristic, and then we sell and build up and become allies with Saudi Arabia. It just blows my mind sometimes on how ridiculous the whole thing is.
But you know what enables this? It's like our friend Nicholas Taleb said when we had him on the show. The people who are outlining these policies and putting these policies in place, they have no skin in the game. There's no downside. No one on our side will suffer. We're not going to get in. We will eventually suffer from bankruptcy. I know what you're thinking.
American people's skin certainly in the game eventually. You
but
know?
All the planners there, you know, okay, let's do a little bit of this. Let's turn this knob and this, you know. And meanwhile, the whole place is blowing up. But the sanctions today on Iran, you're going to enjoy this, because here's what they're for. Brand new sanctions on Iran. Terrible people. Their ballistic missile program, which they're allowed to have. They're just not allowed to put nuclear weapons on it. It's support for terrorism, which, as you point out, they have not committed a terrorist act in the West for decades. It's human rights violations. Of course, the Saudis don't have any of those. And it's transfer of conventional weapons to other countries. And this is from the world's biggest arms dealers. And what that means is that they're sending weapons over to the Shia militias in places like Iraq and Syria to fight ISIS.
Oh, yeah, you know, it just goes on and on. But one thing for sure, they're very consistent, and that is we operate with different rules than we expect other people to operate on. Even if it's international law or United Nations or morality or national defense, we expect them to follow what we tell them, but we set up our own standards, and we can condemn somebody else and even make up the story and say, well, they do thus and thus, and that's why we have to stop them, which might be absolutely false. At the same time, we're the participant. So this is the reason why it shouldn't be complicated. We ought to just come home. I mean, we shouldn't be involved over there. And I still am working on the assumption that if the American people had the information and know what it's costing us, how dangerous it is, and how immoral it is, the people would be with us. Hey, you're right. Bring it home. Does that mean this country would be wealthier? Maybe half our citizens wouldn't be suffering? Because indirectly, if you extend an empire too far, the people eventually will, suffer from it. Of course, you can give them bread and circuses for a while, but then you run out of that too. So we still try to provide the bread and circuses, and yet people are not doing well. We still have these tragic problems here at home, and it is related. It's related indirectly to what we do over there. But I would think that if people really cared about our liberties and cared about prosperity and cared about our middle class and cared about peace, They would change their attitude about what our policies have been domestically and internationally.
And I like what you said about the double standards. We revisit that a lot. But imagine if the shoe were on the other foot. You know, we saw some pretty violent rallies in Berkeley a month or so ago where the pro-Trump and the anti-Trump people really came to blows. Imagine if the Chinese came over and set up a deconfliction zone. They said, no U.S. police or military within 50 kilometers from here. We're going to self-declare it. I don't think it would go over that well.
Yeah, that's sort of a follow-up, and that's a very good analogy when I talk about what if the Chinese did in the Gulf of Mexico what we do in how we claim we have total control of the South China Sea and everything else that goes on there.
But, you know, back to where we started, I guess, and that is the area around Al-Tanf, and the U.S. set up this zone. Essentially, what you have is U.S. and U.K. special forces are embedded with the Army of Revolutionaries, and this is a group of mostly Kurdish fighters, and they're distinguished between the other Syrian Democratic Forces fighters because they also are fighting against Assad. They're fighting ISIS, supposedly, and fighting Assad. So the U.S. is embedded there protecting this group, and it won't let any other anti-ISIS groups, if they're pro-government, in the area. So the question is, what will the Russians do? Who will blink? What will happen next? It seems to me like a dangerous game of escalation.
It's getting awfully close. With us dropping bombs on allies of the Russians, that's just looking for big trouble. And then your big question is, what will the Russians do then? And they are not going to like to lose face because in many ways, from an objective viewer, they've come out more on the moral high ground on Syria, when it comes to international law and following the rules and following an elected government. But what do we care about elected governments if we don't like them? Even if we work with them for 20 years, if we decide that they're not loyal and we need to get rid of them, we have regime change. We have assassinations, and we do these various things. And those kind of things linger for so long. And we're not adverse to that. I'm sure, when it comes to the whole Middle East, we don't hesitate at all if we think that there has to be a regime change. Right now, we're trying to protect the regime in Saudi Arabia. But someday, conditions are going to be such where I think there's, with the leadership in Saudi Arabia in flux right now, I can see something happening there. And then what are we going to do? How much are we going to fight? And right now it looks like we'll do almost anything to defend the Saudis, and then our president turns around and said, oh, yes, we got to do this, and the Saudis are bad, and those Iranians are horrible, and all of a sudden we shift those policies. But of course, it just leads to more trouble.
Yes. So I guess my final takeaway would be coming back to today's Senate vote. I think it's very significant. The irony is that we've always accused the Iranians of violating the spirit of the Iran agreement. But if this vote passes and becomes law, these new sanctions, it may actually violate the letter of the Iran agreement. So how's that for irony?
Well, it's ironic, but it wouldn't be anything new for us because it seems like we're an exceptional nation. We know what's best. We have the moral high ground. And a lot of people are very blunt about it, that there is no other superpower, and we do have this moral obligation. They don't feel guilt at all, or they don't say, well, I have to bend the Constitution. They really believe they're on the moral high ground, and we have this obligation to go and sort all this out, and that the world would be much worse off if they took a position that we talk about, is we ought to just have hands off. I'll tell you what, I am convinced that the world would be much better off if we had an attitude of less intervention overseas and working with people and talking with people, being diplomatic and trade with people in an imperfect world. We're imperfect, they're imperfect. But for us to pick out the perfect leadership in these countries and decide that we know what's best for Syria, believe me, Syria's been around for a long time, and I don't believe that we have perfect wisdom in knowing exactly who and how any country over there should be run. We might have an opinion, but we don't have a moral obligation to sacrifice the people's lives that are jeopardized by us over there bombing, nor the lives that are lost once we send our troops over there, nor the suffering that comes about in this country because we overspend on things that we don't need and are actually detrimental to our economy. So once again, the cause of liberty is the answer to many of our problems that we face today, whether it's domestic economic problems, or whether it's this ridiculous foreign policy where we're determined and obsessed with being involved in every little conflict throughout the world. I vote for non-intervention in all those areas. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.